Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It addresses the motives, mechanism, and occurrences of reporting on the circumstances and addresses contested interpretations of events, the existence of disagreements regarding the evidence of events, and subjectivity versus objectivity in human perception, memory, and reporting.
I don't know where to go from there.
Otherwise known as the Rashomon effect.
Okay.
All right. So just a personal update. So that little introduction is just kind of about the first thing I wanted to talk about. So last week, we talked a little bit about the UK Game Expo scandal.
Right.
Yeah.
If by little, you mean the entire episode.
Yeah, the entire episode. Well, we mentioned a Kickstarter.
Yeah, okay.
And we had a reaction to that on Twitter from Craig. And so he expressed disappointment that I was jumping to a conclusion, jumping to a interpretation of this situation. And I just wanted to clarify that that was based on the only account that we had at that point was the Game Master. And nobody else had said anything to that point. And what I was basically reacting to was cancel culture and let's dogpile on this guy, regardless of what he had to say. Unfortunately, it turns out that what he had to say might be complete bullshit, because he said it was backed up by a recording. Now that recording is corrupted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there probably is no way for him to prove his side. Hmm. His case, like I presented last time, said that there was no mention of rape in this situation at all. There was published recently on a blog a account by a player who preferred to remain anonymous that specifically said, you were knocked unconscious. While you were unconscious, you were being raped.
Right.
While they woke up, the person threatened them again, start running or you will be raped again. Like, they specifically used those words. Mm. So we have two completely contradictory interpretations of what happened at that game table. So there really isn't a decision. And just like in Rashomon, everybody that has anything to say about this, it's all based in self-interest. You know, okay. I don't have a dog in this fight, but the UK Game Expo wants to say this is a safe place for players to come. We manage this well. We stamped this out. We jumped on this right away. And that's fine, but they're a for-profit event that, you know, want to make sure people come back next year. So that's a huge motivation on their part to not talk about the details of this and also just, you know, create a scapegoat, make a bad guy, and just kill him in front of the villagers. I just wanted to say that I understand now, or I see that this is there is not going to be consensus on this. Right. And I just don't like the idea that before people just don't take a breath and kind of wait for opinions to come out and then just kind of weigh, well, who's credible? Who can we trust? And who, you know, who is working from self-interest? Because obviously the GM might have been doing a little salvaging of his reputation or whatever by doing an interview and completely, you know, kind of glossing over the circumstances that happened, because it doesn't make any sense that a GM with like 10 years of experience at running games after 12 hours, I think he played for 12 hours that day, after 11 hours, decides to detonate the vest on his GMing career. And just basically take out anybody that would be interested in working with him again, you know, just eliminating that possibility.
That's an interesting take. I guess I hadn't necessarily thought of that. I mean, you do have a good point. Why would this person detonate their career when they have, you know, a 10-year thing? Mm-hmm. I guess the alternative to that, or the kind of flip side, is perhaps no one was comfortable bringing stuff up prior to this.
Mm. Oh, no.
And I don't know if that's the case. I'm just saying, in general, that is a factor that has to be considered.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's not out of, I mean, I lost a lot of respect for his opinion once I found out that it was probably manufactured, and his account, I guess, not his opinion, his account of things. And it's possible he's just a sociopath. I mean, that's a very possible thing.
It's possible.
Yeah. So you just have to kind of go with that. And yeah, so there's no easy answer, but I think people need to understand that people are working in their self-interest. Everybody that has an opinion has some self-interest involved, if they were involved in that event or that game or whatever. And basically, I don't like the tone. And I think it's just a general tone that people that work, you know, both in social media and in the real world kind of run into, is they're playing this like real life game of Secret Hitler. Like, they want to find the bad guy. And that is like that's their goal. That's the quest in life. And that doesn't exist. People are basically good and they don't want to hurt you. You know, that they don't start from that point. And if they do, there's a really great thing that deals with that. They'll get a little blurry and they'll move off into the periphery of your vision, and then they'll just disappear because you walk away. You remove yourself from a situation where people are, that you feel attacked or you feel that you're being judged or abused. You just remove yourself from that situation, you know, even if it's something that you think you're entitled to be at. Why subject yourself to abuse?
That's fair. I think what I was going to say is, I'm trying to figure out how to frame this. I guess in this specific case, I don't know anything about the GM in this case other than this one story. But talking to someone else today on Twitter, I think what you should tend to give people the benefit of the doubt, you also kind of have to take their track record into account. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I mean, this is a whole other topic. Think about all the stuff that's going on around Cyberpunk 2077 right now. And people kind of chiming in and saying, well, shouldn't we give the company the benefit of the doubt? And my position on that is I would have been willing to do that if they didn't have the track record they already had in certain response. So, I mean, sure, give people the benefit of the doubt, but you don't always have to do that.
Mm. Yeah.
Don't really know where that was going. Other than, yeah, one thing.
Yeah, I just think going in with assumptions or just looking for bad guys because you know, like we were talking about a future topic being you know playing evil races or playing evil characters in a role playing game. There is no evil. There is no true evil. I mean, people get corrupted and are sociopaths. They're against humanity or they're you know power hungry or they're you know they are doing things because of you know some sort of you know mental fixation. But you know, true evil is not very measurable. And to assume that those things exist in real life is...
Well, it does exist in a role-playing game because how else are you going to like go out and slaughter monsters unless they are canonically evil?
Right.
You know?
No, that's true. Yeah, but so bringing that into real life, saying, oh, you must be chaotic evil, so it's all right for me to cancel you. It's like, well, actually, yeah. It's difficult because people want an easy answer and they want a villain.
It might not be one.
Yeah, that's very true. And so in this whole UK Games Expo thing, I think the biggest victim is Free League because they just released the public version, the in stores now is Things from the Flood. And if anybody paid any attention to any gaming news before this game came out, this is the gang rape game. And I think that's really unfair and unfortunate that...
Do you think that would happen? I mean, I'm not saying that wouldn't happen, but do you think that would happen? Or do you think the kind of the only people who might think that are people who are not familiar with tabletop role-playing games, apart from that BBC news report?
Right. No, I think, people from the outside. So, people that are not in gaming, they're going to see the name of that game and they're going to see this incident. And I don't know how the BBC... When I was looking for the actual original article of that, I Googled gang rape BBC. And
sure. That was smart.
You would be surprised how many times they use that in titles of their articles.
Really?
Yeah. So people have found in that Roblox kind of Minecraft robot building game, there's gang rape in that and there's gang rape everywhere. That is such a juicy headline for them that anytime they can put those two things together, they put it in a headline. And that's irresponsible journalism. Well, that's crazy.
As you said, everyone has an interest and that interest in the BBC's case is to drive clicks.
Yes, that's very true. I think, their motivation is very based on their CPM. Okay. We're over that now. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up is...
We're not over that, okay.
We are two people. We are past it. But I would like this to be an example of two people that are probably on very opposite sides of this situation. But we respect each other. We enjoy hearing an alternative opinion. And we take into account what you have to say. It's not like... You don't agree with me. And so this should be an example because I think we're not on exactly the same side of this issue. And we still... can respect each other and play in gaming groups together.
Right. So if there isn't an episode next week, you know why.
I was completely wrong about this. The door is closing. Okay. Well, just me now.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
So how was your week in gaming? Anything come up?
Not really. Still tinkering with a bunch of ideas for gaming related stuff, but nothing really concrete yet. Mm. How about yourself?
This was the week of interviews. So we spoke to a few of the Kickstarters we've previously mentioned. The Grimmer Space Kickstarter, we just spoke with Lou Aresta, who's kind of the writer side of the Grimmer Space project. So that interview will be up soon. We also talked with Ken Spencer from Why Not Games, both Chris and I.
Yep.
And talked about the Rocket Age adaptation for the world's greatest role-playing game, 5.5E.
Yeah. 5.E. 5.E, that's a good one. I like that.
And also, I got a chance to talk to Cass Sawinski, who is the owner of Tomb Guardians. And Tomb Guardians is doing amazing looking, they're 3D printed, but they're doing amazing looking dungeon tiles that have LED lights in them.
Oh, cool.
And it's the kind of first setting for their Dwarf Mines Quest RPG. So this whole series of miniatures and now these dungeon tiles are part of this entire gaming system, kind of a dungeon crawling system that they first came up with at Origins. And so now they're at Origins over this weekend promoting their dungeon tiles. And they're beautiful. They're really nice. And they're hitting that mid-range price. You know, you have that Dwarven Forge stuff that's $100 a tile. So
Dwarven Forge is resin?
Yeah. And I think it's indestructible. Yeah. So these are PLA. These are 3D printed, but very high high resolution 3D printed. So it's not something you could do at your home with a, you know, $200 or even $1,000 3D printer. And they're magnetic also. There's no clips or anything. So they're all magnetically connecting to each other. So yeah, good looking stuff. And you can get painted. They'll pre-paint them for you too. And so, yeah, so we talked a bit about that. So lots of interviews. So yeah, so look forward to a week of talking to people.
Yeah, I'm surprised you still have a voice.
Yeah. Yes, and checking out their Kickstarter.
Meanwhile, I think I've gotten a cold from whatever was going around the office in my daughter's daycare. So if I sound like huskier and sexier than usual, that's the reason.
I thought that was a control that I was playing with on the board. So as far as a future topic for the podcast, I was curious, and I think this would be a good thing for you to lead because I don't know all that much about it, but safety tools in gaming and kind of how they function. So my first question about that is, why do we need safety tools at a gaming table?
I've had this discussion / argument with several people, mm-hmm. and my answer is because you never know what's going to pop up in-game, even when you're gaming with friends that you've been friends with for a long amount of time, mm-hmm. that is going to upset you to the point where you are no longer comfortable continuing to play. Because that's been the debate, and I guess I'll save this for the topic mm-hmm. or the podcast. One of the arguments I've had with people is, well, I game with friends, I don't need safety tools. Mm. And my experience, I was gaming with friends where I very much would have liked to have safety tools mm-hmm. at the table. And this thing that I would have used them for came completely out of the blue. So, I don't think that's an excuse to not have them.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think the addition of alcohol can also make people say things.
Like at the time it came up, we didn't mm-hmm. drink all that much at mm-hmm. the table, and we don't drink all that much now. Right. But I think that's another good point or another good reason to bring it up. Or if you're at a convention game, well, then safety tools just kind of make sense because you don't know the other people at the table.
Right.
So, and it's just a way to say I'm uncomfortable with what's happening mm-hmm. in a way that hopefully won't make the person who has to say it uncomfortable. Mm. If that made sense.
Basically be able to come forward and not, yeah. Do you see that more of as a responsibility of the game master or just the kind of the gaming group itself?
That's a tough one. Mm-hmm. If it's a con game, I would maybe say game master, mm-hmm. but I think other players have to not be afraid to bring it up. If it's a gaming group, then kind of everyone, but mm-hmm. someone may mm-hmm. have to take charge in any kind of situation and say, here's a tool I think that should be on the table. When we've run games at the Kansai Jig, end of the month one, mm-hmm. the GM leading has always kind of started with the safety tool once. Or sometimes another player has reminded me, are we doing this? And I said, yes. Oh, thank you for reminding me. By the way, everyone, here are these safety tools and here's how they work.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's good. Yeah, and that would be what you said. That would be my first reaction, you know, playing with friends. But the situation, we are kind of an expat group. Mm. Nobody's really known each other all that long and people come and go into the group. So I think that makes a lot of sense to just kind of be prepared because you have no idea of, people's sensitivities and things that would be upsetting. But in our gaming group, I'm still amazed. Our Monster Hearts campaigns have gotten pretty gruesome and people hang in there. Like people, nobody is, because I think they understand the intention. They understand the hearts of the people at the table that no one is trying to make you squeamish or make you, feel uncomfortable.
I've also seen someone suggest that kind of safety tools are eventually not needed for the group. It's a way to kind of get comfortable. And I disagree with that because people are people and sometimes you have off days. And I mean, from one session to the next, you might be in a different mood or something's going to not set you off, but be received differently. And you bring that up where it's reading the table. And we were able to go pretty far in that Monster Hearts game. I mean, the last session was just kind of almost nothing but like a blood orgy. But I mean, everybody was on board with that, but there's no way to know when someone's going to have a bad day or whatever, and you're going to need that safety tool. So I don't agree that safety tools are kind of like bicycle training wheels, where eventually you will not need them.
I see. Yeah.
They should kind of always be there.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, what was your actual experience with a game session that you needed those tools and they weren't there?
Sure. It was actually Monster Hearts. Years ago, the first edition Ghoul, which you may have seen, basically incentivized the player to have their character, like the sex move was of the ghoul. Once you have sex with someone, you are incentivized to have sex with that person again. Mm-hmm. And a couple sessions, my character, who was not the ghoul, was kind of teasing along the character who was. And then when it eventually happened, as it made perfect sense, the ghoul character basically came tearing after my character, chasing her through the hallways of the school. And I myself suddenly started feeling very uncomfortable and afraid as all of the NPCs in that setting basically disappeared and ran away. And no one was helping my character. Mm-hmm. My character was vastly outclassed physically by this ghoul character. Mm-hmm. And I, the player, started feeling bleed and very uncomfortable about how no one is helping me. And that took me completely by surprise because I have experienced nothing like that as a person myself. So I kind of hold it up as the poster child example of you can have lines and veils, you can discuss beforehand what is and isn't on the table, but sometimes stuff just happens where you kind of don't know where it came from, but you want it to stop.
Oh, that's very interesting. And I think that's a good illustration that maybe helps people get their heads around, like, you know, how that functions and the need for it. Yeah. Or just not playing Monster Hearts.
Or just not playing Monster Hearts. I mean, that's the other option. That's the other option.
Yeah, but I think Monster Hearts 2 addressed a lot of that, a lot of the things.
The sex move for the ghoul changed, although it was it is open where the ghoul sex move is. Make up your hunger.
Oh.
Right? And if you want to, you could sit and make that hunger having sex with that same character.
Right, right. So, yeah, you could recreate that same situation.
You could, yeah, yeah.
A future topic, I think that would be very interesting. It's not something that I know much about, I guess, because most of my gaming was in childhood.
Right, right.
So we didn't have sensitivities like, stab him again, I mean, we've mentioned a bunch of Kickstarters anyhow related to interviews. So I'll put links to all of those Kickstarters still running. I think the one with the shortest, I think Grimmer Space is on its last 10 days. But everyone else is doing really well. And everything's funded. Like everybody we talked to is funded.
Well, I was going to say, there's no way Grimmer Space wasn't getting funded based on
Starfinder. They're like 1,200% right now. They're cleaning up. I think it's just because it's the Iron GM Games' first Kickstarter, but they use such experienced people and they did their research and just their viability study and things really showed that they knew exactly where to aim. And I guess their experience in the industry, they'd been working with Paizo for a while.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was fun in the interview too that Lou had to say. I'm completely forgetting it now, but their license obligates them to say that this is playable in this Starfinder compatible setting. Like they have this instead of the world's greatest role playing game,
a
pat thing that they have to say. So yes, this is this game works. So we're writing this game for the Starfinder compatible setting. Yeah, the Starfinder compatible setting of Grimmer Space. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, all of these companies. I mean, I guess that you've got to protect if you let people abuse. If you let people say D&D their official literature, then you lose that trade. Mark, yeah.
Yeah, no, I see that. But it is kind of funny all the ways people have to come up with to say Dungeons and Dragons. And it kind of irks me a little bit that it's become the world's most popular role-playing game. I mean, fair enough. It is. I just think there are ones that are better.
When I did my unboxing of the D&D 5e starter set, there's a thing at the bottom that says everything you need to play the world's greatest role-playing game. And I read that as I was unboxing it. I was like, oh, that's perfect. That is exactly right. And I was like, I meant the everything you need to play, not the world's greatest role-playing game. So it sounded I was like this D&D fanboy, like, oh, this is the best game
ever. That's what it is. It's the world's greatest role-playing game that irks me rather than most popular. Because you kind of can't dispute that it is the most popular.
Right. Yeah, they should say best-selling is all they're allowed to say, legally. Well, I'm glad we got through that. And we're still in the same room.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, yeah. The door hasn't slammed shut yet.
All right, so where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, at HiveMind, HYVEMYND. Mm-hmm. I essentially live on Twitter.
Nice. And what about your Patreon? How are things going?
Things are going pretty good. Past the second goal, June releases, which go out to supporters first, are getting released last Friday. Every month, that's the schedule I'm sticking to.
Oh, nice.
And then the last Friday of the following month is when they go public.
Okay. And the website?
Oh, sorry. Yes. It is Fantastic Fate Resources, either at Patreon or I bought my own domain. So it's also just fantasticfateresources.com.
Nice. And of course, you can find Utter Red Hands at utterredhands.com. Our Patreon is patreon.com/utterredhands, and that gives you input on the show, hearing all the live streams, all of the uncensored nonsense that goes on during the actual plays.
All the outtakes, yeah.
Yes. And on Twitter at utterredhands. And also Instagram and just about every social media is utterredhands.
Are you a MeWe?
No.
See, I am. Barely. It's funny, like running kind of a social media, I guess, not empire, it's tiring. It's a lot of work between all the different social media accounts and making sure they go up to the right one and kind of are formatted for the correct thing between Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus is dead, unfortunately, MeWe. I don't have an Instagram for Fantastic Fate Resources because that's image-based and not really compatible to what I'm doing, but still, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I can imagine. And each platform has its own etiquette and its own way to kind of generate interest and get followers. Either you need to be hashtag crazy or follower crazy
it's a full-time job. So in other words, join my Patreon and pay me to do it.
Pay me to post on social media. Nice. Well, excellent. Well, yeah, thanks for joining us this week. And as always, we will be back next week with another Idle Redheads Weekly. Goodbye.
Bye.